Welcome to Getting Through It, where we're here to help you get through it. I'm John Bueri, and as always, I'm joined by the unflappable Dr. Lucy Jones. So let's get to it. Today, we're going to be talking about how America seems to be losing ground in controlling the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yes, but before we get into our topic today, I first want to offer my thanks to all of our supporters on Patreon for giving the financial support to the Dr. Lucy Jones Center and this podcast.
And if you haven't made your pledge for a monthly membership, please go to patreon.com/Dr. Lucy Jones Center. That's Patreon, PATREON.com, and then just search Dr. Lucy Jones. It's how we're able to do this and all the work of the nonprofit in service to our communities. So when we talk about when this pandemic started, Lucy, we were warned of a second wave, right? They looked back to 1918, the Spanish flu, and they said, yeah, there was a second wave that was worse than the first one. Now we're seeing an uptick in cases, but this isn't the second wave, is it?
No, to be a second wave, we would have had to come down from the first wave. And the unfortunate reality is we have not seen the drop in numbers that we were trying to get out of shutting down across the country. I mean, if you look here in California, we were seeing it rise really rapidly, and we went into shutdown to try and control it, and it stabilized. We got to basically a constant level of daily new cases, but we didn't decrease. And then we swung up again a bit more as we had more testing, and then we opened up even though it wasn't heading down, and just like the epidemiologist told us was likely to happen, we started seeing the numbers go up.
So let's just start with the basics, the science behind this. What can you talk about what is known about the transmission rates with this virus in particular?
Okay, for any disease, if it follows exponential growth, that is literally defined as meaning that the number of new cases is proportional to the number of cases you've already got. And we can look at it with saying each infected person on average can infect some number otherwise, you know, some other number of other people. With this virus, when we don't control it, it looks to be that number is somewhere 2 to 3. Let's call it 2 to be simple. So you have one infected person and he infects 2 others that come down with this over the next 10 days. And then each of those 2 infects another 2 people. And then each of those 4 people infect another 2 people each, and we now have 8 people. Now, when you think of that 1, 2, 4, 8, that's not very many people, but let's keep going a few more rounds. And now maybe we have 1,000 infected people, and the next round there's 2,000, and the next round there's 4,000. And we get, we're approaching 100,000 cases per day. If we keep this up, then after 100,000, the next round will be 200,000, and the next round will be 400,000. And so you see these exponential growth, it all looks good until it really isn't, and it accelerates, it just gets out of control so quickly.
But why are we seeing it here in the U.S., whereas in other places it's not rising?
Okay, well, if you look at, compare what we did with what we did in Europe. So in both cases, we had this rising number quickly, we realized what was happening, we slammed into shutdown. But we had some buts here in America. Especially, you know, there was an exception for going to the grocery store. There was an exception for takeout food. There were exceptions for keeping the meat plants open. So there are a lot of exceptions that a lot of other countries didn't give. And so we never got really far down. And then there was a lot of pressure to open up because of the economic consequences, because we didn't, you know, in some other countries, people who lost their jobs were all given enough money to survive and to not get kicked out of their apartment. We didn't do that. The economic consequences started coming in, political pressure then to open up. And in most states, we opened up before we had reached that criteria. Do you remember they said 14 days of declining numbers before we reopen? Almost none of us got there before we decided we had to reopen because of economic reasons. And once it's still there in the community, which is shown by the fact that the numbers weren't dropping down, once we release the restrictions of the shutdown, we go back to where we're talking 2 to 3 people per infected person. And that's this issue. Transmission is not inherent just in the virus. It needs human behavior. The shutdown was intended to isolate us from other people to the point that we could get it down in control and figure out ways of being able to track it when we did open up again. But because we opened up when there were still so many cases going around, we haven't been able to institute the tracking.
Here's the big question for all of us, leaders and community members alike, Lucy. What do we do about it?
Okay, it means we have to be willing to have some restraints. We were trying to control exposure by keeping people isolated in their homes. And we now feel that economically we can't afford to keep on doing that. So we have to restrict the exposure in some other way. And that's when we get to masks. Masks and staying outside. We have discovered that it mostly is transmitted through sharing indoor air. So moving activities outside help, but also the whole thing that the mask is restricting those droplets in your mouth from making it out into the general air and therefore to be breathed by other people. And it's both the physical blocking of the mask, but also the ability to condense the moisture in the mask. So we could, if really everybody was wearing masks, we could reopen a lot of activities and not be seeing the increases that we're having right now. And I'm struggling to understand why people don't get this.
You know, it's interesting. The work that I do around community resilience reveals some answers there. And that's the truth that people crave community. It's what Maslow enshrined as belongingness, just above food, water, air, right? And we have all been robbed of that feeling of belongingness because we've been isolated for months in our homes. It's why we're clamoring to get back into the most mundane places, places that we probably didn't even like going, like work. Because a mask is a barrier between us and someone else. It's a symbol of our separateness. This is why there's so much emotion around the guidance and restriction about something as simple as wearing a mask. That's what we're seeing. I mean, we can't smile at someone. And 80% of human communication is nonverbal. So think about what that means to people as they try to interact with others.
Well, then, John, from a community standpoint, how do people get through this? How do they get to feel like they belong even when they're wearing a mask?
It reminds me of the work we started to do together when we first started working together back when we planned the first shakeout, if you recall, back in 2007, 2008. When you came to me and you said you wanted to do something to engage the public, I was giving you the basics of what applies now, that you give people something to do that they can do with others. And for shakeout, it wasn't just a drill, right? It was the process of planning and being a part of something to get ready for it and then do it together. So I think now people are venting frustrations publicly. I think people are doing it privately, and they may be even just doing it internally. We can all find ways to diffuse that anger through focused collaboration. And what does that mean? Basically, finding productive work with others. It's not doing a puzzle alone in the evening. It's not organizing the last closet in your house for the second time. It's sending an email or making a call to three colleagues or friends or even family members and asking them to help with something, asking them a question. You know, is it a question about cooking, a question about gardening? Asking a question is the first step in finding collaboration. And that process of collaboration leads to reconnection, leads to bonding, and then belonging.
You know, I remember when we first shut down, I found myself calling my sister, calling some friends I hadn't talked with in a while to see that they were okay because, you know, we're feeling like we wanted to reach out to other people. But I have the feeling, I know for myself, did a lot of it in the first few weeks and then got busy with the work that could happen at home and maybe got a bit depressed. Yep. And haven't been doing it so much.
I mean, I think it's like the same reason we were all doing actions and rituals and routines when we first started this, because there was adrenaline. It was new to all of us. We were very vigilant, and things have waned. And I think that's one of the things that was sacrificed, is that extra effort, that deliberate action to reach out and connect with someone. And I think when we look at people who are complaining about wearing a mask, that they've claimed that they have to give up their liberty in order to wear a mask, it's not that they're giving up their liberty. And what they're really doing is people are feeling like they're giving up their humanity because they've lost the connection of belonging to other people. And I think with all of this emotion, we really get to the place where we have to find people that we can turn to. And I think, Lucy, you've become that for, some would say, hundreds of thousands, if not millions People, I know it's sometimes uncomfortable to feel that attention, people look to you and trust you during the worst of times to give clarity and direction. And I think that many of us, you know, there's been a lot of news stories recently and articles that have been written about your work, and both in the connection to earthquakes and also to the pandemic. But I think the one question that I have, having worked with you for so long, and I don't think I've ever asked you this before, is who do you look to and trust for information the way that people look to you?
Well, see, I don't think I or most scientists look to a person. We look to science and research because we know that you can, that things are true not because somebody said they're true, but because you've been able to document that there's no other explanation that explains that nature of reality. So when I'm looking at the pandemic, I'm reading their research papers and saying, is this one that really did the research? And then, you know, one paper alone isn't enough. Are there five papers that all are showing that outdoors is safer? And yeah, there is. And so let's start saying that clearly. And, you know, I hope that when people listen to me, it's not because I'm so comforting or, you know, some emotional connection. I want them to say, listen to her because I can trust that she's done the research to say whether or not something's true. And, you know, I'm not the only scientist who knows how to look at research. That's what we do. There are good scientists to listen to. And even you can learn to do a lot of it yourself. But, you know, can you look at a piece of information and say, what evidence did they use? Is there some other explanation? And you don't jump to that other explanation. You say, did they, you know, who's been able to show that this one works and this one doesn't? You know, evidence that the real world is what matters.
So as we think about this pandemic, it's going to continue on. We know that based on the ebbs and flows that we're seeing. We're in a spike right now. That second wave is still looming, is according to what we've talked about. This isn't going to end in 2 weeks or 4 weeks for us here. And it's going to require us working together as a community to truly get through it. Your closing statement there really, though, resounded with me when you said that it's about seeking out that information. What can people do to verify information? Where should they go? Is there any place that you would go that you could recommend that they look at that may be accessible to a non-scientist?
Well, for a lot of things, it's worth looking at Snopes. You know, they really are trying to say, is the evidence really there? Did they put it together? And, you know, facts matter. So, but the other thing is don't trust one source. Put in the effort to look at several ones and see whether or not it really stays around.
Well, I feel like this is a topic we're going to continue to revisit both on the clarity of science and the pandemic itself. So we're going to have to talk about this again in the future. Until next time, I'm John Bueri with Dr. Lucy Jones and you, Getting Through It. Getting Through It is a production of the Dr. Lucy Jones Center for Science and Society. Visit us online to get past shows and become a supporter at patreon.com. That's patreon.com and search Dr. Lucy Jones. At Patreon, you can get extras, insights, and access to the entire world of Getting Through It. Our music is performed by Josh Lee, and this closing music is written by our very own Dr. Lucy Jones.